It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 371 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we have Rob Wolinski, the creator of a really horrific book, and I mean that in the best possible way. It's called SCOTUS. It's described as a political thriller in the life of a killer. There's a Kickstarter going on right now, and if you go to SCOTUS, and I guess I better spell that, well, you'll hear that more than once, S-K-O-T-U-S, from Robert Wolinski, and it's described further as, what if the President of the United States was a serial killer? It's the House of Cards crossed with Dexter. I've backed this Kickstarter already, and I hope you will too once you get done listening to this interview, because Rob has a lot of really interesting things to say about comics, about politics, and about this book, as well as Kickstarter. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Rob Wolinski, the creator of a chilling, and I mean chilling, comic that I got a chance to read called SCOTUS, S-K-O-T-U-S, which stands for Serial Killer of the United States. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good, good. I have to say, when I read this, I was, like I said, my blood ran cold, because it is one of those dark comics. This is not for kids, I take it, this book.
Yeah, definitely not for the kids. I would not exactly call it R, but it's definitely like PG-16, PG-15 at least. Okay. And I'm definitely glad that you got that eerie feel, because from a comic medium, I feel like that's something that's super important, to be able to take still pictures and just like pictures and text without any movement and be able to give you such strong feelings. So that makes me happy to hear that.
See, the good books make your mind fill in the gaps between the pictures. And I think your book is one of those.
Perfect.
Because, oh gosh, well, we can get started on talking about it. But why don't you describe what the book is? I'd rather you do the describing of it than me to try to fumble around, try to figure the best way to do it. Because I want to know what you, every comic has stuff that we don't want to spoil, and stuff that we can talk about. So I'd rather let you set the stage for that.
Yeah, sure. So SCOTUS, Serial Killer of the United States. It's basically the story of the president, Theodore Voyage. He is a serial killer. He uses serial killing as a way to sort of get what he wants. So for example, say he wanted something passed in office and someone stands against him, with really strong backing, really against this stuff, he's going to get that person out of the picture his own way. You see that very early in the comic, in the first couple pages, where he's dealing with a huge problem he has, where someone's starting to figure out who he is, and he's got to get them out of the picture. So it's sort of the story of what would happen if we had someone in office that had unlimited power, and no one was stopping them, and if someone did try and stop them, he took care of them by killing them.
Mm-hmm. Where'd the idea come from for this?
All right. So I'm a huge fan of the lore of Ted Cruz, Texas Senator, being the Zodiac Killer. Okay. And it's always sort of a joke I would always make about it. And then it just sort of became like a comic that I always wanted to make. In my phone, I have just a list of ideas. Some of them are paragraphs, some of them are pages of story. This one in particular just said, the President of the United States is a serial killer. Mm. And it's something that was always in like the back of my head. A big thing I always think of is when you have an idea for a story and it just sticks with you, and you don't necessarily have to write a ton down, but you just remember it. It's, if it sticks with you, it's going to stick with other people. Mm-hmm. So a big thing I wanted to do was get this story out in particular, and it's so topical right now. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where the background of it came from. And then I took it to that next level of doing the president, since mm-hmm. when people think of the president, they think of sort of like the ruler of the free world, the most powerful man in the United States. So I wanted to take it to that next level, kind of.
Did you ever watch the fifth season of 24 when it was on Fox?
I did not.
Okay, good. Well, that's good, because there's some similarities between the story you're doing and that season. That season, the bad guy was the President of the United States.
Gotcha.
And, you know, they won an Emmy as the best show of the year for that. And it was, I got a little bit of the feeling, but your comic takes that much farther than they ever did on 24.
Yeah, I got a lot of inspiration. I'm a huge fan of like the show Dexter, where he works in this crime lab, but he's committing the crimes and he's covering his own crimes up, things to that nature. And then, of course, House of Cards, before all the Kevin Spacey controversy, of course. But that just took I tried to take both of those ideas and sort of amplify it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just chilling is the only word I could describe it. It's just, you know, it's the kind of thing when you read it, you know, you worry that this could very easily happen, unfortunately. Yeah.
Surprisingly, that's something that I personally never really thought of until this was sort of taking this to the press. A lot of people that I've done interviews with have said, like, do you think this is something that could happen? Mm-hmm. And then I had to think about it for a while, and I was like, you know what? At this point, nothing would surprise me. Mm-hmm. Nothing in our political system that happens anymore, I go, oh my God, that's extremely shocking. I go, yeah, I could see how that happened. Like, I don't agree with it necessarily, but I could see how these things happen. And
you know, the thing that gets me is, like, people in authority that abuse their authority are always particularly scary to me. I mean, you know, there's a lot of examples we can use. There was stories of priests who used to abuse young boys, and there's, you know, I grew up in an area in Pennsylvania where there was a lot of, well, let's just say people were constantly being fired for pocketing money that the taxpayers had put in, and I was always just like, I thought, how do you do that? You know, how doesn't the guilt get to you after a while? But, you know, most of them were just thrilled to be, because they didn't feel like they got paid enough. So they were happy to take the money from other stuff. But you also are getting into another area that gets me. I'm always interested in serial killers from the angle of why.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a huge thing I've always been interested in. A lot of like docu-series, like the new Ted Bundy series, the re-imaged sort of telling of stories, like Mindhunters is one on Netflix. Netflix has a ton of serial killer stories that I love. Like, I'm super fascinated with the Zodiac Killer too, and just I love the stories where they're being told from the serial killer's point of view, sort of. Like when I hear Ted Bundy, the Ted Bundy tapes, and he just talks about how he didn't do anything wrong, and he's super charming, and he just seems so normal, and that's the part that I find so interesting and so chilling, that you can know a serial killer in real life and never actually know it, and that's what gets me.
That's the scary part. That's the part is, you know, these people. I mean, I was watching something about BTK recently. He was a pillar in his community. He was one of the heads of the church that he belonged to. And yet he would go out and murder people. You know, he would take kids on a Boy Scout outings. And while they were sleeping, he would go out and murder somebody.
Yep. There's so many different factors to it. But one with serial killers that I find is the most common is their very calm demeanor. Mm-hmm. The fact that you could either, the ones that do eventually admit it, the fact that they could talk in gruesome detail about how they murdered someone or like sexually assaulted someone or something like that, so calmly without any remorse at all. That always interests me a lot.
See, that why gets me. I read a book and I wrote a review recently of the Green River Killer. It was told from the perspective of one of the detectives that was hunting him down, rather than from the killer. Chris, you know, the thing I got to the end, the thing that got me was that he couldn't get Ridgway, the killer, to say why he had done that.
And yeah, that's
I just got to ask. I mean, as far as your character, is there a motivation? Maybe you don't want to spoil it. But is there a reason why he does this kind of stuff?
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit. I won't go into too far detail, but there's definitely part of the Kickstarter is we're doing an issue zero, which is sort of like a prequel where eight people get the chance to actually get murdered in the comic. Mm-hmm. It sort of tells the early story before he becomes president, where he murders these eight people to sort of either cover up his past or advance so that he could become president without anyone getting in his way. So we sort of touch on it there. And then in the comic itself, there's some talk about his past, his childhood, things like that, things that sort of drove him to become who he is. But for now, we're sort of leaving it partially a mystery because, like you said, a huge part of it is everybody wants to know why. So I want to make sure that that final, like, definite answer is part of like the penultimate of the comic itself.
Okay, so you got a Kickstarter going on right now, and this is, you're saying this is a zero issue as far as the series goes?
Well, this is issue one is 22 pages, okay. And then we're also doing an 8-page issue zero, which is sort of a prequel. So we're sort of binding the two into, I guess you'd call it more of like a volume one sort of deal.
Okay.
So the first 8 pages are sort of what he has to do to become president. And then issue one takes place about, I think it's 2 years into his presidency.
Okay. I don't think I got to read that prequel. I'm going to have to. Of course, I as I told you before we started to record, I've already pledged for your project because I want to see this kind of be such a great thing. I love stories that are different. You know, I buy a lot of Long John's stuff, but I occasionally want to read a story that's very different. And this one is one of those things, like I said, it just, you know, when I got done reading it, I was in a very different frame of mind than I was when I started to read it. And it's just great.
Thank you. But as a comic book writer, a big part of it for me was I wanted to be able to write the stories that I wanted to read. I've never been like a huge fan of the superheroes, like people that have sort of unlimited power from not a. I always liked stories that could actually happen. Like, mm-hmm. I never was a huge fan of like Superman or things like that, where it's like there's someone who you don't really think they're going to die or like mm-hmm. they have like ultimate power sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I always like the idea of like characters like Hawkeye, who was just a guy who was really good with a bow and arrow, mm-hmm. Sort of like that street level. And then this, of course, the president takes it to a new level, being able to get whatever he wants, but it's still something that you could say like, this is possible. Mm-hmm. Like this is something that could ever happen in reality. Mm-hmm. And those are the stories I really like, which always drove me to like more of Image Comics. They have a lot of good like murder mystery books, things like that, where it's like, I could see this happening and that's what scares me.
Yeah. Oh, believe me. Mm. So this is going to end on Wednesday, March 20 at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yep.
So I strongly encourage you, after you listen to this interview, to go out there and get the Kickstarter and look for SCOTUS, SKOUTS, and it'll take you right to that place. Now, when we're recording this, is a little early in the process, so you've already collected a goodly amount of money, it seems to me. I don't know if you want to talk about the goal or anything like that. But
yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, right now we're at $1,506 mm-hmm. of $6,500. Mm-hmm. This is definitely the largest scale project I've done so far. Mm-hmm. I'm working with an Italian artist, Niccolo Arcudi. I met him online. We just sort of clicked probably about, I want to say it's 2 years ago we connected mm-hmm. in March. And I basically pitched him a few stories and he was like, this is the one I want to do. Like, this is the one that speaks to me. And I was like, great, this is the one I want to do too. Mm-hmm. And then ever since then, we've been slowly working on it. And then in the past year, we really just sort of kicked it into overdrive, started getting things done. Mm-hmm. He has a friend that is he's a professional painter. He does like figurine paintings and he is doing the colors for our comic. And this is his first time ever doing the colors. So he does the colors on the cover, which is available to see. And he does these beautiful, he makes it seem like a painting. Like he takes it to a whole new level. We originally wanted to do the book in black and white with red for blood mm-hmm. to sort of give it that feel. And then he told me, like, I have this friend, he does great colors. And I was like, let me see what he does. And he showed me some stuff. And I was like, I can't even imagine the book not being in full color at this point now. Wow. It adds a whole new dimension to it.
Because that's interesting, because the version you gave to me to look at was black and white with the red.
Yeah, we are still, he's still finishing up the colors. He came way late into the project. He just got involved, I want to say, late last year, like November, December. Mm-hmm. So we only have a few colored pages ready. Mm-hmm. So that's really the only thing we have left to get done for the campaign. Mm-hmm. But, I also wanted to leave that element of that want for everyone, really. Mm-hmm. Because I hate showing, the one thing we offered was a 9-page preview of the comic in black and white. Mm-hmm. And it lets you get a huge feel for the story without feeling like you've already, like, why am I backing this? I've already seen it all. Because the color just takes to a whole new level. So
okay.
Once you read those 9 pages, if you read those 9 pages in color, it just takes it to a new place. Mm-hmm.
Well, the black and white got me, I have to say. The red just... like I said, it gave me chills when I was reading it, because it was just, it's one of those things that's really terrifying. You know, somebody that you think should be dependable is not. Now, I have to ask you, though, as far as, you call it SCOTUS, which, of course, you know, I used to live in the Washington, D.C. area, and so I'm a little familiar with how the government functions, and they love abbreviations and stuff like that. I think the SCOTUS is the real one is Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS.
Yeah.
But you use that same kind of thing, which is what a government official would do, was to find some way to abbreviate it into something that would like that. Do you have any experience with like government and people who work in the government or anything like that?
Not really. I did a lot of research for this book. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff that I just didn't have a lot of knowledge on. Mm-hmm. When doing the writing, a big part was I wanted to always make sure that people were addressing the president in the way that someone would address him, like always address him as like Mr. President or Sir, things to that nature, like the layout of the White House. Who would he would be involved with on a day-to-day basis, things to that nature. A thing I always worry about in comics is that I'm going to put out a comic book and then someone's going to get on the internet and be like, well, this isn't actually how this would happen.
Yeah.
My first comic I ever did was all about time travel. And I was like, I know that one day someone will be like, well, this could actually never happen. Mm-hmm. Like, so I always try and do as much research as I can, even if I'm familiar with a topic, just to make sure that it's as believable as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's believable, believe me. I keep saying it was something I couldn't turn away from until I got to the end of the book. So it's really great stuff, particularly if you like politics and you're interested in those kinds of things. I think you're really going to find this resounds with you. There's a couple of things I think they're just so fascinating about the story and about the book. It looks like this is set in a post-Trump era, because Trump is mentioned in the as I read it.
Yeah.
And it sounded like he was in the past. Now, I'm not going to get into politics of all that, but obviously that this person comes in after Trump, and that's a very different setup for him. Talk about that. I mean, because a lot of times in comics, they don't mention real presidents, or if they do, it's like Superman being JFK or something like that. And it's not something that really has much to do with any kind of story. But you brought that in as an important part of the story. I thought that was really fascinating. You know, why go that route? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, I want to... The path I wanted to take with the story is I wanted to give it that sense of realism, mm-hmm. of... I want people to think, like, this is my president, and I'm reading a behind-the-scenes story of him sort of feel. So it's going towards, like, that 2020-2022 era where this is... taking place, mm-hmm. Because in future issues, we're thinking about talking about maybe other sort of political things that are going on currently, but maybe taking like a satirical spin on them. Mm-hmm. Like the one thing that we were up in the air about talking about was the whole thing with the Amazon headquarters that are coming, mm-hmm. that was coming to New York and is coming to Virginia, mm-hmm. Sort of having him be involved with that, sort of how like Trump's always making jabs at the Amazon CEO, mm-hmm. sort of having the President Voyage and our comic have some sort of interaction with a big CEO of a company, mm-hmm. like sort of take a spin on things that are already happening in real life.
Now, how many issues are in this series? That's something I wanted to ask.
We plan for 4. We're just starting work on number 2. Okay. The thing that we really want to wait on is just to, I don't want to get too deep into things until we see how this campaign works.
Okay.
It's one of those things where Kickstarter is one of those platforms where I don't have a ton of experience with it. So I've never actually funded like an issue 2 of something, and I'm not sure how that will work out. So mm-hmm. in a perfect world, I'd like to be able to raise enough money here where we could go issue 1 into just 4 issue collected trade paperback. Okay. Because it's much easier logistically.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it happens that way. I mean, you know, you make enough money on your one issue that you can do the second issue as well.
Yeah. So that's the big thing that we're not stopping production altogether, but we're taking our time, okay. making sure we're focusing on this Kickstarter, this issue 100%. Okay. And then maybe we're just going to go from 1 directly to all 4 trade paperback.
Okay. Are you going to... Okay, so it sounds like you can do 1 and then go to trade, is that I heard you say. So you're not going to do individual issues after you do 1?
It's something that I guess we're not 100% on right now.
Okay.
I'd like to, but in my mind, it would be very difficult from a crowdfunding standpoint to do like an issue 2 Kickstarter and an issue 3 Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I have like friends and backers and people that love my work that are always there for my campaigns. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's a lot easier to say like, hey, back issue 1, you loved issue 1, you'll love the whole collection, the trade paperback, than saying, hey, fund issue 1, hey, fund issue 2, issue 3. Like, it's just, from a creator standpoint, I don't want to exhaust all my resources.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes it's, you know, as you go along, sometimes you develop a bigger fandom.
Yeah, definitely.
But on the other hand, sometimes if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, every issue you're going through Kickstarter, some people run out of money and they can't really support you that much.
Yeah, it's definitely different from a retail standpoint or working with a publisher. And that aspect is that it's much harder it's much easier to say, hey, go to your local comic shop and spend $4 or $5 on the comic than saying, hey, back this comic. Mm-hmm. It's going to come out in a few months. Like it's that waiting period. It's hard to maintain that fan base. It's a lot more work than from a retail standpoint.
But you know, the climate is changing. I've been reading work. Somebody was saying that if you put all the comics together that are successfully funded through Kickstarter, they would actually be like the number 2 publisher of comics behind Marvel.
Yeah, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think the comics section is like one of, if not the most successfully funded section on Kickstarter as well.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm kind of interested in that because, you know, there are a lot of people who are making a lot of money with the Kickstarter because they've done their homework like you have and stuff like that. It's more likely to work when you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think yours is that way. I want to get back to the story, though, for a couple sure. minutes, because one of the things I watched for when I read the book was any way you were going to indicate, despite the mention of Trump, I don't think you really identify which political party this person belongs to, Mr. Voyage, unless I missed it. I mean, did I miss it?
No, definitely. That was – so I don't consider myself a super political person. I would never, if someone asked, I don't conform to one party or another. I mm-hmm. consider myself an independent. I look at what's going on. I say either I agree with this or I don't agree with this. So I never try and take a side from that aspect. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to sort of segregate backers in that aspect. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a very, I'm not even sure how to put it. It's a very sensitive time in the political world in general, where people take things the wrong way or they get offended by things. I didn't want to do that with this, mm-hmm. while still having a political base. Mm-hmm. like especially if you look at something like House of Cards, mm-hmm. there's not like, it's not like that takes one direct side or the other. Mm-hmm. There's not like this is a show for Democrats or this is a show for Republicans. And I didn't want this book to be, this is a book for Democrats. This is a book for Republicans. But mm-hmm. I would definitely say that, if he was to take a party, it would most likely be Republican.
Okay.
But we, as of right now, we're not touching any like hot topics like that. Like we're not talking about like his stance on like abortion, things like that. Like no hot topics on that era.
Because that's a smart way to go. Because I see sometimes stuff come out with a particularly unique bend in one party or the other. And I always feel like you're cutting out like 50% of the potential people that might want to read your book. You know, but you're not doing that, which I think is a really smart way to go about it.
Yeah.
It's such that probably if people don't happen to like Republicans, they probably think this guy's a Republican. If they don't happen to like Democrats, they'll think he's a Democrat. But that's good. I mean, that you want to get as many people reading and buying the book as you can. And so I think you're going the smart route.
Yeah. The other thing is that I personally have more of like a comedic background when it comes to writing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of sort of dark humor and like satire built into the story, mm-hmm. that sort of probably makes it lean to the left a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of like the like jabs at like Ted Cruz and like jabs at Trump and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, it's more that those are like topical things to poke fun at right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the future, we could have like a Democratic president, and if he does something stupid, I'll probably make fun of it in one of my comics, like that sort of thing. Like it just happens to be that right now that Republicans are a little more topical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Obama were still in, you might lean more towards that, towards going with a Democrat and stuff. But that was the thing. I paid attention though to that, and I was happy to see that you didn't, because there are certain comics I know that come out now and they just, you know, I keep saying, man, you're losing 50% of the people. I mean, how can you do that?
Yeah, I'm definitely not trying to pander to mm-hmm. to a certain side or say like I'm not, or the opposite, saying like, oh, I don't want to offend people, because there's people that I'm sure would be like, oh, this is like a cool comic, and I might not necessarily want to be a fan, sort of thing. Just because of the, if they're taking like some sort of like hyper stance on something I don't agree with, but mm-hmm. I don't like to immediately be like, this goes by these beliefs. If you don't believe that, don't touch this comic.
Yeah. Well, but you're not buying a comic to get political beliefs, really.
Yeah. I like to give everyone has a chance to read it, sort of thing.
It's a murder mystery, and there's, early in the book, there's a really interesting thing where there's somebody that is working with the president, and what the president does, he has found a way to be able to go out of the White House without being noticed.
Yeah, that was definitely something I did a ton of research on, because I was looking for, like, I was doing research like how would the president get out of the White House without anyone knowing, like 2018, there's not really a way they could do it. I think it was Nixon was the last president to ever sneak out of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely had to take a spin there. Mm-hmm. But so that's really where that is. I don't want to get too much into that, because it's definitely like a fun part of the story where It's where it takes a turn.
Now, there's two other parts of the creepiness that get to me. I think he refers to himself as the Patriot Killer. Now, I'm always wondering, does that mean he's killing patriots, or does that mean that he's a patriot who's doing the killing? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's sort of like, from my understanding, serial killers don't pick their name. Like, the Zodiac Killer wasn't like, I'm the Zodiac Killer. Mm-hmm. He was killing people. He was leaving all these cryptic Zodiac symbols and stuff, and that's how they labeled him. Or, like, in Dexter, his brother is the ice truck killer because he uses, like, the ice picks and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is more of the way he murders people. Mm-hmm. And the message he leaves behind. So it's more of like the police are giving him that name, and he is like proud of that. Like he's made a mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that really spooked me out was the way that he sings patriotic songs while he's doing things.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite part of the whole script. Because even writing that was eerie to me. Is mm-hmm. He's definitely like, it just shows that like he murders someone, he's trying to hide the evidence, and he's whistling songs and having a grand old time. Like, mm-hmm. like he's having a good day coming home from work.
Mm. See, that all is really ultimately creepy to me. Now, I don't want to give away the latter parts, but let's just say, the line that the president says is, we just had the carpets cleaned. And I remember going, you know, when he said that, because that's kind of the way a president would look. They don't want to have, let's just say, there's any trace of what they're up to going on. So that spooked me out, too. This is, if you like the creepy and you like this kind of stuff, I think you're going to really enjoy this book. It's very, very haunting. And the way that it does things. And it's interesting to me that you said that you write comedy a lot. Because there's not a lot of comedy in this one.
Yeah, it's definitely, I would definitely say it's definitely like a horror thriller first, then political, and then there's like slight undertones of like dark comedy. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of hidden jokes. There's and a couple of scenes, there's pokes at like the Zodiac Killer, Ted Cruz, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely the comedy aspects of this took like they're like the third fiddle in this. They are definitely like undertones, things that maybe if you read it like two or three times, you'd be able to catch them all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess ultimately the thing that really bothers me is that, you know, somebody who can cover up these kinds of things, he has the authority and the ability to do that, is all the more terrifying and all the more horrifying to me. You know, I've gotten to see stuff of the first issue, and I what he's going to do from here on out, I can't imagine, but oh my gosh, you know, now of course I got to know. I got to see what else goes on. Because if this is, and this is the first issue, what are you going to do on the other issues?
Yeah, it definitely, I have some things planned that I can't wait for Nicola to be able to start doing the art for, because issue two is going to start off really, really gruesome. It's going to, it's almost to the point where I would say like people that don't have a very strong stomach are going to be deterred away from it, because I know exactly what we want to do. Mm. And it's very dark, and I'm really excited for it because of it.
So don't eat before you read these.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a really good book. Again, it's called SCOTUS, SKOTUS. If you go to Kickstarter, you'll be able to find it there. And I highly encourage you to get in there. He's got 44 backers as of this recording. By the time this posts, he'll likely have plenty more. And I would highly recommend that you get out there and get this book in your library, because I think it's going to be something fun to really read. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, too, that you have a website with your name, Rob Wolinsky. Why don't you spell Wolinsky for people?
Yeah, it's Wolinsky.
Yeah, it's all one word, robwolinsky.com. And you do a lot of different things, but I want to focus on the comic books. You've got three comics listed there. Looks like one of them is called One Comic to Rule Them All Anthology. Now, is that, did you write the whole thing? Did you write one story in it? How'd that work?
Yeah, that's, I have one story in there. I'm trying to figure out which one is which. I believe that's like, in both of the anthologies, I think they're only 4-page stories. They're just, sort of just little stories that went with the topic. The one comic to rule them all was, actually, I have to look. I always get confused between the two. The other one was, okay, so the one comic to rule them all was a very open-ended one. Mm-hmm. What did we do for that one? I'm trying to think, but I have them all on my desktop so I could check.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, we did a sort of it's like a 4-page story. It's if you've ever heard of like Overwatch or Heroes of the Storm, mm-hmm. The Blizzard titles, we did like a parody on those characters, like Genji and D.Va, like all these super popular characters, mm-hmm. but as animals.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of it being Heroes of the Storm, we did Heroes of the Forest, mm-hmm. where there's a sort of like a Ferngully twist where these people are trying to cut down their forests, and they're sort of defending themselves with like acorns and carrots and like as weapons. So it's just like a fun little 4-page story. And then the other one is the vilified one, where we had to do stories on a villain. So I did sort of like a older brother picking on a younger brother sort of thing, with that twist that even though like he's being mean to you, he's still like your brother and he's there for you sort of thing.
Because that's called power-ups, power-ups.
Yeah.
Vilified. So that interests me too. When we get done here, I'm going to go buy these things because I'm going to be fascinated to see what else. But there's one other book that you did, and this was the one you did a Kickstarter for. Is it called Double A Squad or AA Squad? How do you
put it? Double A Squad, double, yeah. A that squad. That was my hardest part in making it, as I had to like, I was like, I have to find a way to very easily be able to define that. So there's a lot of places where I was doing stuff for that, and I just straight wrote out Double because it was easier for people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's was my first comic. I had that idea for a very long time. That was the first comic I ever made. I had no idea what I was doing. Literally, I had this idea for a comic for years. I never did anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
One day, I woke up and I was like, I'm gonna start making comics.
Mm-hmm.
I went online, found some people who I like their art, I like their colors. Mm-hmm. I contacted them through email, mm-hmm. told them what I wanted to do, and then we just started work on it like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Kickstarter stuff, I had a few friends that I had originally started doing like comic news.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had like a review website for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I was involved with people that were running Kickstarters, but I never made comics or ran a Kickstarter before. So this was when I started to basically take the switch from writing about comics to writing comics.
That's quite a leap.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a huge gap for me. I had basically no idea what I was doing at the time. I was just learning as I went along. And even now, when I'm so much more prepared for this Kickstarter than I was for that one,
mm-hmm.
to the point where I'm just like, man, I can't even believe that I managed to get it funded. I was grinding so hard for that one. I was on Twitter literally typing in like Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and then when somebody would back something on Kickstarter, it would pop up on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a comic book, I would like send them a tweet and I would be like, hey, if you like this comic, you might like my comic. Like
mm-hmm.
I was grinding for like dollars.
Wow.
Like that was a rough one. Like I was very, prepared wise, I would legitimately say I'm probably 50 times more prepared this time around than that one. I've learned so much over the last couple of years.
Well, good. That's, you know, you figure these things out as you go along, you know.
It's just, yeah,
like, it was interesting to hear you describe how you got started. You made the decision to go and start making comics, and that's, I think, some people just have to, you got to make that choice and you start acting on it.
That's a big thing, that when I go to conventions and I see people and they talk to me and they're like, hey, like I'm really interested in writing comics. Like, I love to write, but like, I just don't know how to get started. Like, how did you get started? I say the same thing every single time. One day I wanted to write a comic, so I did. Mm-hmm. So that's just what you have to do. It's one of those things where like, you can't just think about it or say you're going to do it. You just have to push yourself and just do it. Even if you don't know what you're doing. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just, mm-hmm. I had to do it. I was like, I want to do it. I'm going to do it. I'll figure it out as I go. And that's what happened.
So I can only, you know, admire that kind of talent, because my talent is to write reviews. I read something that I like and I can tell you why I like it. But if I had to start from scratch and tell a story, I would flounder around for probably a couple of years trying to figure out what in the heck to do.
That's sort of how it started for me. It was always like I was very interested in talking about comics, talking with creators. Mm-hmm. And that's how I made a bunch of contacts mm-hmm. in the field. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it was like, I'm reviewing comics and I'm like, I don't like this about it, or I don't like this other thing about it. And I was like, why am I even bothering writing about what I don't like about the comics when it's almost like a spiritual experience where I was like, I shouldn't be writing about what I don't like about comics. I should be making comics that I want people to like, because I like everything about them. Hmm. Every story I write a story for myself, or something that I know that I would love. I would never write a story about something that I couldn't get behind. Hmm. Because there's so many comics that I see that I'm just like, I can't. There's an audience for everything, but there's some comics that I know aren't for me, and I'm like, I just don't like this, and I just had this just, it sort of just came to me like, I want to do this myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not alone. I mean, there are certain people like certain kinds of comics, and some people just, they're totally different. They don't like Definitely. Those kinds. So I'm always kind of intrigued by that.
Yeah, a huge part of it is the indie comic community is incredible. Mm-hmm. They definitely don't get enough credit. I mean, I had basically no idea what I was doing starting out, and there's mm-hmm. so many creators that helped me along the way, or just like kept me going, or like telling me like I was doing a great job when I felt like I was doing a terrible job. Mm-hmm. It's such like a positive community. It's like mm-hmm. it's like an internet family. And they don't get enough credit for what they do.
Well, you know, you guys have all done things that other people only wish they could do. Yeah. And you actually make it happen. I think that's quite an accomplishment for those things. So it's robwalensky.com. If you go to Kickstarter, it's going to be SCOTUS, SKOTUS, to track it down. Now, you talk about interacting with the indie community. Do you go to cons at all, or show up there?
I try to. Mm-hmm. So on February 4th, I had my first child. I had my son.
Oh.
This year is very limited for me.
Yeah.
I have one con in April. I'm going to Camden Comic Con, which is a pretty local convention I've gone to for the last 3 years in a row. So that's probably it for me. I don't want to really leave New Jersey. I don't want to do like a weekend con where I'm away from my family. So, but hopefully 2020, I'll be able to do maybe some of the bigger ones.
Well, that'd be good. But you know, real life gets in the way of comics, and you're a creator. You're created something that you're responsible for. And so you're taking responsibility for that. So it's good. Well, you know, I enjoyed the book. I can't wait to read the other ones that you're doing. And I'm sure your Kickstarter is going to be a big success, and I dying to see more of it. So I see what else you're going to do. So, Rob, you know, I just wish you all the success in the world, and keep going, because I think you're doing great stuff, and we need more great stuff.
Thank you. I mean, I definitely appreciate it. I mean, 80% of my problem is not having, like, positive support all the time, anytime I get into my own head. So having the support of others, like Nicolo, my artist, he's been, like, a huge help to me. Like, there was points in time where I was like, I'm done with this book. I don't want to work on it anymore, but I felt like I had to keep going because he was a part of it, and I couldn't let him down. And mm-hmm. literally without having my team of creators with me, I know I wouldn't be able to do it by myself.
Oh, well, you know, congrats to them and to you for getting these good things done. That's a wonderful thing.
Yep, thank you.
people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.